that one of the two main migration routes for the first modern humans was from what's roughly modern Ethiopia to what's more or less modern Yemen. And they are also where, more than 1,000 years ago, the first coffee was cultivated. Arabica coffee. While the drink has spread from nation to cafe nation and is now claimed to be second only to oil as the world's most traded commodity, all is not well back at source in and around Ethiopia. According to a new study by the Royal Botanic Gardens at Kew, Arabica could be extinct in the wild within a matter of decades. We're joined by Kew's head of coffee research, Aaron Davis, and Dr. Nigel Maxted is on the line from Birmingham, where he's senior lecturer in genetic conservation at Birmingham University. Aaron Davis, I know some people only drink coffee beans grown in particular ways on particular slopes or that have passed through the digestive tracts of particular animals. But for those who don't know anything about Arabica, how significant is it in terms of the modern coffee industry?
Okay, so there are two species used to produce the beverage, Arabica and Robusta. Arabica provides us with about 70% of our commercial product and, of course, Robusta, 30%. But the coffee we drink, whether it's in the high street or at home, is Arabica. And that's the high premium quality coffee that we know and love.
And it's grown now, of course, all over the world in all sorts of different conditions. Yes. But your study is concerned with the original species in the wild.
Yeah. So we're focused on Ethiopia and South Sudan, which is the home of wild coffee. And what we're seeing is that under a changing climate, that over the next century to sort of 2080, those wild populations are under considerable threat from climate change alone. So that doesn't factor in deforestation.
Right, and have you done this by what? By computer modelling?
Yes, so we've spent some considerable time collecting the data. Once we were satisfied we had a good data set, then it was down to the modelling to give us not only a prediction for the future, but also predictions for the present day. And both provide us with very powerful tools for assessing risk for this key species.
And can you say briefly why the changing climate is such a threat to these wild species?
Yeah, that's a good question. Arabica coffee and many other species of coffee are very climate sensitive. They only produce flowers and fruits within a very narrow temperature range. Now, the industry is very worried because they're interested in productivity and cup quality, and even 1 degree can make a big difference. But we're going a bit further than that, and we're saying, actually, it's not about morbidity, it's about mortality. And what we might see in Ethiopia, and we're already seeing in South Sudan, is that climate change is significantly negatively impacting those populations.
Okay, we'll get on to what the consequences might be. But Nigel Maxted, has this sort of study been done before for other species, or is this a first?
It has been done before. There's a study done on wild peanuts, potatoes and cowpeas a few years ago. And in that study, they found that 16 to 22% of crop wild relatives, these species that are closely related to crops in these genera, would go extinct by 2055. And the remaining species that remain in existence would lose their range by about 50%. So very dramatic. But one of the very interesting things of that particular study was they found it very, very much from gene pool to gene pool. So for the Vigna, the cowpea in Africa, the effect of climate change wasn't so dramatic as it was for Arrakis in South America, where 31 of the 50 species would go extinct by 2055. So it varies very much from species or gene pool to gene pool. And Aaron's study has shown that coffee is one of these groups that's going to be impacted really harshly.
But I can't imagine that many of the coffee cups I'm drinking come directly from wild coffee taken from the slopes of mountains in Ethiopia or Sudan or wherever. Is this something the coffee industry needs to take seriously because it's the source, or is it something they can discard because they've moved on from this?
No, it's we need to take it very seriously because the food security is based on these wild species, because You have this continual evolution of pests and diseases with the crop. So one is the pest is the overcoming the resistance in the crop. You get this continual evolution. And increasingly with climate change, we need the genetic resources, the genetic diversity, the resistance in the wild species to overcome the evolved pests and diseases. So we do definitely need these wild species.
Aaron, I don't want to cause unnecessary alarm for coffee drinkers because they're jittery enough already, but how long would it be, if things continue as predicted, how long would it be before this filters through to affect what's in their cup?
It's very difficult to say. What the study's about is about assessing risk and managing risk. So it's not just about scaremongering, about giving it your extinction figures. It's about understanding what we need to do to preserve those important crop wild
and
relatives.
What do we need to do? Or what can we do? I mean, it's not easy to turn back the changing climate.
No, but two very clear things come out of the study. Firstly, it shows you which populations are under the most threat now and in the near future. And those are the ones that we need to preserve in ex situ situations, germplasm collections, seed banks, etc.
Like the Millennium Seed Bank at Kew.
Like the Millennium Seed Bank at Kew, exactly. Secondly, what we've shown is that some areas in Ethiopia will be able to withstand a broader range of climate change up until the end of the century. So if you're designing nature reserves or protected areas, you have to factor in climate change and climate change modelling. For example, you don't want to spend millions of euros or dollars or whatever preserving a protected area against, say, deforestation if that area is going to become ravaged by climate change. It's a way of helping decision makers make those important decisions.
And how aware are you that the people who are making these decisions are across this information?
I think we've only just begun. And hopefully studies like this and the studies that Nigel's talking about will open up the debate about exactly what we need to do and when.
Nigel, I think you're the chair of the IUCN Species Survival Commission on Crop Wild Relatives Specialist Group, if that isn't too many words I've thrown in there. how much power do you have? How much power does industry have? If we are dealing with major forces here and a very unprotected species, is there a lot you can do about it, apart from, you know, run around alarming people?
Well, there is a lot we can do, and there's a lot we can do now and should be doing now. But if I can come back to the earlier point you just asked Aaron about, Aaron said that we should conserve these species ex situ. If we take Europe as a model, then only 10% of the crop-wild relatives that are present in Europe have any seeds at all in gene banks. And one presumes that Europe is the most highly conserved flora in the world. So there is a big deficit in terms of conservation ex situ and putting material in gene banks. So we need to be very actively doing this. And in terms of in situ conservation, that's the conservation conserving the material where it's found in the wild, there are only about 6 or 7 genetic reserves, these sites where we have genetic conservation around the world. So we need to be much more active than we are now in terms of conserving them in situ. And there is a meeting at FAO in Rome next week on Monday and Tuesday to talk about setting up a global network of in situ conservation sites around the world for the approximate 1,300 priority crop wild relative species of about the top 200 crops worldwide. So we do know what to do, but it's getting the impetus to actually achieve it is the next step.
Okay, I'm just desperately racking my brains, but FAO stands for
Food and Agriculture Organization
of
the United Nations.
I knew that one. I just would not come to mind. No, it's my job is to spell out acronyms. I mean, Nigel, when we were told that Arabica could soon become extinct in the wild, it does seem alarming, but I then realise I've no idea what the status is for the wild versions of lots of other plants. I've no idea if this applies to tomatoes or strawberries or anything else.
Well, interestingly, you should ask that. We've just done a study in Europe looking at the 572 native European crop wild relatives from 25 crop groups, and we found that about 16% of them are threatened, so they have some level of threat. And although there are only a relatively small proportion that are critically endangered, in other words, imminently going to go extinct, it's only about 4%, it's still a real number. And again, we know more about the European flora than anywhere else in the world. And crop wild relatives tend to be focused in developing countries where the flora is least known. Climate change is going to probably have its most dramatic impact.
Aaron, finally, has any of this changed what you think when you have a cup of coffee? No, by the sound of it, no, you still...
Not really, no.
Not really. OK, no clouds in your coffee. OK, Aaron Davis, Dr. Nigel Maxted, thank you for being severe and grave and philosophical, which is what coffee makes us, according to Jonathan Swift.